Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Jack Rasmus, the show, Alternative Visions. Today I'm going to go solo again. The topic, well, actually two topics. As I indicated last show, I want to talk about economic predictions. My predictions last year. Every year I make economic predictions of where the economy is going to go. And last November 2011, not the most recent, but the one before, I made a series of predictions, appeared in an article in Z Magazine, January 2012. I made predictions about the economy, and I want to come to those predictions and talk about them, as well as maybe suggest some new predictions. And in subsequent weeks, we're going to have a couple guests on here where we're going to talk about what's going on with the economy in the coming year. But first, I also want to add another commentary on the continuing political charade called the fiscal cliff. Kind of timely here. As you probably know, there was a partial agreement yesterday in Congress and Obama on the so-called fiscal cliff, a.k.a. austerity American style, as I like to call it. This partial agreement was reached late last night, and I predicted last November, right after the elections, that there would be an agreement when everyone else was saying, oh, no, we're going to go over the cliff. Well, the cliff is not really a cliff. It's really a tax cut speed bump. Even if we went over the cliff, it would not be very impactful in terms of the effect on the economy. And whether you go over the cliff or whether you have the resolution to the fiscal cliff, either of those are going to have some negative impact on the economy. In fact, the solution may be worse than the problem itself, as we will soon see. Anyway, let's have a few comments about this agreement, this fiscal cliff. First of all, it's not over. It's only just begun. What they did yesterday was come to a partial compromise agreement on tax cuts, raising taxes and generating revenue. You know, for over 2 years now, the ruling elites of both parties have been saying they got to reduce the deficit by $4 trillion. And the debate has never been the $4 trillion target. The debate has always been how much tax hikes, how much tax hikes on the rich versus the middle class, how much spending cuts, how much spending cuts in defense as opposed to social programs like Social Security and Medicare, which they call entitlements. Nonsense. It's not entitlements. These are deferred wage cuts. That's what they are. We put money into these programs as we work our whole lives, and we expect those deferred wages to be paid when we retire. Well, it's a deferred wage cut. You know, it's not just auto workers getting their wages cut. It's not just teachers getting salaries cut. Now they're going after retirees and taking back some of the money they put in Social Security and Medicare. So these are wage cuts. These are not entitlement cuts. But now the big focus will be on entitlement wage cuts. We're going to see why. What was this agreement last night? Well, as I predicted, they were going to find some sort of a common ground, compromise common ground, on the issue of raising taxes on the 2% and on the rest of us, of course. Well, they found that common ground, but, you know, it really was very beneficial to the very wealthy. You know, when we talk about the wealthy 1% in this country, you know, this 1% in 2010 got 93% of all the gains in the income in 2010. In the previous decade, they got 65% of all the gains of the income. And in the 1990s, they got 45% of all the gains in the income. So the wealthiest 1% households, these are folks who average just under $2 million of income flow gains every year. The wealthiest 1% have not only done well, but they've been doing increasingly well. From 45% of all the income gains in the decade of the 90s to 65% to 93%. Okay, so we've been talking about, Obama's been talking about how we're going to put the pressure on these folks and get some of this money back, which is the real reason why we have the deficit. All these folks who talk about spending, 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 that's not the main problem. The main problem has always been insufficient tax revenue. In the year 2000, taxes, federal taxes as a percent of GDP was 20.6%. Well, they've fallen to 14%. They've cut taxes by 6% of GDP. Well, if GDP is $16 trillion, that's $1 trillion a year every year. Well, you know, that's just about what they, what the deficits and debt have been over this past decade. Now, there's some spending involved in the deficits and the debt, but it's about a third of the problem. Most of it is the Bush tax cuts, and in addition to that, the very slow recovery in two recessions in the last decade, and the slowest recovery on record since 2008, which has cut tax revenue. Taxes are two-thirds of the problem of the deficit and the debt. But yet all we hear is, oh, we got to cut entitlements. Deferred wages, remember. Oh, we got to cut entitlements. Social Security, Medicare, so on and so forth. Well, Social Security is not the problem. Social Security has been running a surplus for 25 years that the government's been borrowing. Social Security has been carrying the federal budget for 25 years. And yes, there is a problem in Medicare costs, but it's because Medicare health care providers and insurance companies and so forth are driving up the cost of health care. And, of course, that's impacting Medicare and Medicaid. And, of course, we passed the prescription drug bill under Bush 2005 and didn't provide any taxes to pay for it, paid all the deficits. So that's the problem. On the spending side, the health care cost explosion, and, of course, the defense cost explosion. You know, normal consumer prices have risen 2% per year over the last decade, but defense spending has risen 8.2% over the past decade. We've spent just an inflationary defense military spending, i.e. income going to the defense corporations, $2.1 trillion. And about $3.4 trillion over the last decade has gone to, guess who? The wealthiest 1%. So there's $6 trillion of your $10 trillion run-up in the total deficits and debt in the U.S. as a result. Okay, so I think I made my point. It's a tax question, stupid. It's a tax cut, stupid, as they used to say. Anyway, what do we got here with this this deal last night? Let's take a look at the deal. Well, for one thing, it amounts to $620 billion in tax hikes. Not on the top 2% that Obama's been talking about. It's less than the top 2%. It's somewhere between the top 1% and top 2%. Let's call it 1.5%. Okay, so the Republicans chipped away at that, and they got it from the 2% to the 1.5%. Okay, so what else is involved in that? Well, Obama said he wanted to raise taxes, the threshold and the top rates on everybody making over $250,000, the family making over $250,000 in income per year. Well, that's been raised to $450,000. Well, okay, Republicans in the House, they got another $200,000, and for singles, non-married families, from $200,000 to $400,000. So they did pretty good. They got Obama to double the threshold limit from $200,000 to $450,000. That's why it's not 2% tax cut. Now it's about 1.5% on the top 1.5%. Okay. What else is involved in that? Okay, the dividend and capital gains has been increased. Tax has been increased from 15% to 20%. The estate tax, which brings in over $50 billion a year and affects only one-third of 1% of all the households in the country. All right, we get a token increase from 35 to 40%, but you know what? The exemption stays at $5 million. In other words, if you are very wealthy and you pay an estate tax, you get the first $5 million exempted. Okay, what else is involved in this deal? Deductions. We will now begin phasing out itemized deductions at the $300,000 a year level. Beginning phase out. We will see the details of that. We don't know, but that's how they're going to creep the tax cuts down into the middle class. Okay, what else is involved here? There's no extension of the payroll tax cut. Now, that's the only real tax cut here that the middle class has been able to get some enjoyment out of. You'll see some results from. All the rest are taxes on the rich. Well, that expires. That's $100 billion a year. If you look at the Congressional Budget Office report of a few days ago, the net tax cuts for the middle class are negative. Yes, if you raise the payroll tax cuts and you extend these other middle class tax cuts as part of this deal, the middle class is going to end up paying more. There is no tax cut for the middle class in this deal. In fact, there's a tax hike for the middle class. Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? Well, you know, what we're talking about here is a minimal amount of $620 billion. Now, remember, their target is $4 trillion. So $620 billion is only about one-seventh of the total $4 trillion. That means they're going to go after spending cuts for the rest. We are entering phase two of fiscal cliff negotiations. Phase two. And that's going to be focusing almost totally on spending cuts and really focusing on Medicare. Did anyone listen to what Obama said last night? Did anyone listen to his statement late last night? Well, if you had, you would have heard a very interesting comment by President Obama, and that is, quote, almost virtual quote, "I am very ready to compromise." And then he said, Medicare, quote, "Medicare is the biggest contribution to the deficits." The president actually said that. Well, it's blatantly false. If you go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, there are a number of running commentaries, about 1,500 words each, that I've been adding here in the last several weeks on this fiscal cliff negotiation. But there is also a piece I wrote called "The Eight Real Causes of Deficits in the Debt." Medicare is not one of them. Well, maybe you count the fact that we didn't provide anything for Part D prescription drugs, and that's part of Medicare, right? But in terms of people collecting more Medicare benefits, or more people collecting Medicare benefits, or Medicare benefits being too generous, no, no, no. Nothing to do with the deficits and the debt. As I said, what's the big causes of the deficits and debt? Escalating inflationary defense spending, the Bush tax cuts, the failure to come to a real recovery, prescription drugs without paying for them, interest on the debt, the bailouts, okay, the bailouts, nearly $2 trillion, most of which went to corporations, you know, and banks and so forth. That's the deficits and the debt. Not Medicare benefits, but yet President Obama says he's going after Medicare. He's giving a big signal to the Republicans. Let's chop Medicare. And, of course, Medicaid, which is related to Medicare here. It's a government health care subsidy program for the poor, for the disabled, for single mothers making minimum wages, and so forth. That's what Medicare provides for. Okay, we're going to let those folks die by cutting Medicaid. And Medicare, we're going to make the seniors pay more out of pocket. They're not going to cut, I predict, the benefit coverage, but they're going to make all of us seniors pay more out-of-pocket deductibles and co-pays. Watch your Part B and D contributions go way up. That's how they're going to cut this stuff. Okay. And as I said, check out my blog for my last six entries, all on the fiscal cliff negotiations. That's jackrasmus.com. Very simple. Running in-depth predicting, so far coming true, what I said, a number of developments, and I will continue to do that on my blog. Let's take a break right now and come back and talk about this a little bit more. And then after the mid-hour, we'll talk about economic predictions. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.
Consulting treasure in blood. Here we stood the job. Now we'll stand the flood. There's a new world coming. I can see the light. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be all right.
Jack Rasmus, your host, show Alternative Visions. Today we're doing an update, given the fiscal cliff partial negotiated settlement last night on the fiscal cliff, as we have been in previous weeks and will continue in subsequent weeks, because this fiscal cliff stuff is not over. It's only really begun. And we are going to see more of a focus on cutting of spending at this point, since they've come to the partial agreement. A very nice agreement for the very wealthy really cuts about in half, at least, what Obama had proposed. You know, Obama was proposing before the settlement raising revenue $1.2 trillion. Well, now we only get $620 billion. So he came down by half. He reduced it by half. Republicans didn't make any move on that. So he reduced it by half. He raised, he almost doubled and raised the threshold cutoff from $250K to $450K. So very nice deal here. And, of course, he sweetened the estate tax, hardly touched that at all. And what really made it appealing to Republicans and why some of them vote for it is that these tax cuts are now permanent. In other words, the Bush tax cuts had an expiration date. But now they will be, these tax measures will be embedded in stone in the tax code. They don't have to worry about having to fight to extend them again. And as we're going to see, yes, the Republicans and the House radicals gave up a little, on this whole tax question, but they're going to come back for another bite at the apple. Obama, in his statement last night, said, future negotiations on spending cuts, and we know he's targeting Medicare like the Republicans, future negotiations on spending cuts are going to have to involve tax issues as well, because we only raised $600 billion. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a bridge in New York you can buy for nothing. The Republicans, the House radicals, are not going to agree to further tax hikes on the rich. In fact, they're going to come back and try to take away, with smoke and mirrors, some of the tax hikes that were agreed upon yesterday. You can bet that's what's going to happen. Now, why is it going to happen? Well, because Obama made a real strategic error in this deal. And I predicted this strategic error in one of my articles, most recent articles, last Sunday, in fact, in which I said the article was entitled, From Fiscal Cliff to Debt Ceiling Debacle 2.0. Remember the debt ceiling debacle of August 2011? Right? Remember that? Where we had another brinkmanship? The House Republican radicals took us to the debt ceiling cliff. You know, we're exchanging one cliff to another here, from the fiscal cliff to debt ceiling cliff. When does the next debt ceiling cliff come up? Late February, early March. We're going to see a repeat of August 2011. What happened in those negotiations? Well, the Democrats totally caved in. We're talking about tax hikes, but got no tax hikes and agreed to $1 trillion in all spending cuts in August 2011. $1 trillion, all spending. What did they get in exchange? An agreement not to have another debt ceiling fiasco until after the November 2012 elections. They traded that delay for $1 trillion in spending cuts and another $1.2 trillion in deferred spending that was to take place here on January 1st. That's called the sequestered tax cut, spending cuts, sequestered, half of which, $500 billion, was supposed to be defense spending cuts, and half, $500 billion or so, non-defense spending cuts. Well, in the deal yesterday, this issue of sequestered $1.2 trillion has not been resolved. Ah, that's what they're going to start talking about now. Whether we continue that $1.2 additional trillion in spending cuts, and whether it's half defense or not, I predict it's going to be much less. It won't be half in defense spending. Maybe it'll be a fourth or a fifth in defense spending cuts. And that will be smoke and mirrors from withdrawing from Afghanistan and the cost savings there. Because now they're starting to build up their military investments in the Western Pacific to check China. You know, we had an army war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and all the expenditures went to the ground forces. But now it's going to be a Navy Air Force expenditure boondoggle in the Western Pacific over the next decade. Okay, so I predict that, it's going to be mostly spending cuts and, of course, social program cuts. And, of course, Obama admitted that himself when he said Medicare is the cause of everything. Okay. If you go back to some of my predictions of the last 6 weeks, my first article was predicting the fiscal cliff. All this is on my blog, by the way, jackrasmus.com. I made 7 predictions. At the time, I predicted there would be a deal. Everyone else was saying, no, we're going over a cliff. Why? Because corporate CEOs were now aligned with Obama, and we're going to put pressure on the House to get enough votes to pass the deal. And, of course, that's exactly what we've seen. Not reported very well in the regular press is the multiple meetings, scores of meetings between Obama and his aides with CEO, Fortune 500 CEO, Business Roundtable, big CEO, major lobbying group, the number one lobbying group, along with the Chamber of Commerce in this country, meeting repeatedly, almost daily. In fact, even before he met with Congress, he had 3 meetings with CEOs. Before he met with Congress to talk about the fiscal cliff negotiations way back in mid-November. And they've been meeting every day, almost every day since. And, of course, CEOs go back to Boehner, the House Speaker, and the voters in the House, they think they can peel off from the Tea Party and the radical right in the House. And, they're cutting deals and counting votes. I made 7 predictions. Among which would be not just an agreement, but there would be a 6-to-1, 5 or 6-to-1 mix in the deficit cutting. In other words, for every dollar of tax hikes, there would be $5 or $6 of spending cuts. Well, if we look at the $620 billion only in tax hikes out of the $4 trillion, that's about 6-to-1. We're on track for that. I also predicted, and we will see in the next couple months, the big cuts in spending, particularly for deferred wage entitlements, will be backloaded. What does that mean? It won't hit the economy immediately. It will be scheduled to hit the economy in 2014, 15, and beyond. So people won't feel it as harshly all at once. There are other predictions I made. Go back and see my predicting the fiscal cliff of mid-November. I then predicted in another piece called The Well-Orchestrated Dance that Obama and Boehner were going through the motions here. And pretty much that was the case until the Tea Partiers jumped in and refused to pass Boehner's Plan B. Remember Plan B of a couple of weeks ago? And then I have a piece there called Boehner's Bungled Bee Bargaining. Boehner kind of blew it in terms of his lining up his votes, and that was the last hurrah of the Tea Partiers in the House. And after that, I had a piece last week called Obama Doubles Down to Box in Boehner. Now, this is very important because what Obama did late last week was to say, okay, I want to vote on this proposal here, this 2% hike proposal that I've had on the table a long time. But if that doesn't happen, I want Harry Reid, head of the Senate, Democrats, to introduce a bill if we go over the cliff on January 1st, on January 2nd, I want this bill to now provide tax cuts for the bottom 98%. You know, if we didn't extend the Bush tax cuts, then everything would be off the table. But you could easily put on the table once again our proposal to cut taxes for the bottom 98%. Okay. I predicted that would not be necessary because the Republicans would see by the 31st that it was better in their interest to agree to some sort of a deal than to let the fiscal cliff happen and to let Obama introduce a tax cut for the 98%. Because if you had a tax cut for the 98%, how could the Republican radicals not vote for a tax cut for 98%? He had them boxed in. But he blew it. He blew it. Because you could easily have a proposal, cut taxes on the 98% and tie in no more debt ceiling brinkmanship. You could tie those two proposals together, and Republicans could not vote against a tax cut for 98%. Even if they didn't like the idea, they couldn't pull another debt ceiling debacle for the next 2 years. But Obama agreed to break them off. So now what we've got is a partial, not a 2%, a 1.5% hike on the rich, and the debt ceiling deal looms as the big hammer the Republican radicals in the House now have, once again, as they had back in 2011. What that means is the next 2 months is going to be focusing on spending cuts, entitlements, and the fiscal cliff will be their hammer, and they're going to do a repeat, I predict, of August 2011, and we're going to see a lot more spending cuts than tax cuts eventually in the outcome by late February, March. Okay, that's my prediction on the fiscal cliff situation. Let's take another brief break, and we come back. Let's talk about predictions, other predictions for the economy, past and future. This is Jack Rasmussen, your host, Alternative Visions. We're talking about the fiscal cliff deal of yesterday. Just a few more references for folks other than my web, my blog, jackrasmussen.com, where I've had six articles here in the last month predicting what was happening and what's going to continue to happen. You can also go to my website. I have about seven or eight radio interviews on other radio stations across the U.S. here in the past month, and you can listen to my further comments on those radio interviews. Just go to my website, which is KeyCloseProductions.com. Oh, that's a mouthful, isn't it? Yeah, I shouldn't have named it such a complicated name, my website, but just Google me, Jack Rasmussen. And you will see Kyklos Productions, spelled K-Y-K-L-O-S, productions.com. Go to my website. There are a couple things of interest to Fiscal Cliff there. One is go to the interviews tab, and you will see all my radio interviews of the last month on this topic. And also, go to the Articles tab, and you will be able to read my lengthy, feature-length, 6,000-word analysis of the fiscal cliff called The Three Faces of the Fiscal Cliff article that also appears this month in Z Magazine. I believe Z is out. You can also read it on Z's website. So just Z Magazine, the article is The Three Faces of the Fiscal Cliff, 6,000-word extensive essay on that particular topic. Okay, so let's move on now from predicting the immediate policy picture, of course, fiscal policy, meaning tax and spending, right, to something a little broader in terms of economic predictions. As I said at the outset, every year I write a summary article on the economy for Z Magazine, and the last one appeared in the last January 2012 issue, Economic Predictions 2012 and Beyond. What were some of those predictions that I made, and how have they turned out so far? I will have a subsequent article in Z as well for predicting 2013 and beyond. Well, I've been arguing for several years now that we are not in a normal economic situation. We are in what I call an epic recession, which is not a normal recession, not yet a depression, something of a hybrid or an interim kind of economic situation where we don't get really robust economic recoveries. We kind of bump along the bottom, neither in a recession but neither in a recovery, and that this can go on for quite some time, years in fact. Another case of epic recession is Japan. And it's been two decades in which Japan is bumping along the bottom. Several, not a double dip, but a triple, quadruple, quintuple dip recessions have occurred in Japan, and they are in another one now. And, of course, we've got Europe in recession, and it's going to deepen over there, no doubt. And the rest of the world is slowing down economically, even though there may be some still some growth left in China and so forth. But this is a global epic recession, as I call it. Fiscal policy does not work very well, and neither does monetary policy. Well, monetary policy meaning central bank pumping money into the economy. Well, one of my predictions, prediction one I made a year ago, meaning December 2011, I made the prediction that the Federal Reserve, our central bank, we'll introduce a third version of quantitative easing in 2012. Well, I hit that nail on the head. QE, as we call it, quantitative easing. What is this? This is where the Federal Reserve, the central bank, prints money and goes out and buys bonds from investors, mostly mortgage bonds, but they could be also buying treasury bonds. Who holds mortgage and treasury bonds? Well, the wealthy 1%. These were the bonds that collapsed in value during the 2008-09 crisis and were worth maybe 20 cents on the dollar. But the Fed prints money now, goes out and buys those bonds back at almost full market price. Well, that's a big subsidy to investors, isn't it? Well, we had QE1 in 2009 worth $1.75 trillion of such printed money buying bonds at above market value by the Federal Reserve. Then we had QE2 that followed it, worth $600 billion more, so that's $2.3 trillion. Then we had a deal called Operation Twist, was just a variation on this theme, a kind of a QE where the government sold short-term bonds and bought long-term bonds, another $400 billion, Operation Twist. Okay, so now we're, you know, $3 trillion of buying with printed money. And I predicted at the beginning of the year, we were still in Operation Twist. I predicted that wasn't going to be enough. There would be another real QE, a QE4. And, of course, that's what happened earlier in this fall. The Fed announced QE4. What was that? That was another $40 billion every month without end. So we had $40 billion in Operation Twist going on, and another $40, $45 billion in QE4 that's been going on. The Fed has been buying $85 billion of bonds above market interest by printing money now for almost 6 months, and that has no expiration date. In other words, that can go on for as long as the Fed wants to do that. So we're soon going to be over $4 trillion in printing money and buying back bonds by the Federal Reserve. Well, what's been the effect of this? Has it stimulated the economy? No. What has it stimulated? Why has the Fed done this? Well, two reasons. One, it really boosts up the stock market and, of course, the bond market. You're buying bonds, increases the demand for bonds, increases the price of bonds. Oh, bond holders make a windfall. And it also increases stocks. Well, how is that? Because when the Fed pumps the money into investors like this, the investors turn around and they start buying stocks and drive up the stock market. In my book, Obama's Economy, Recovery for the Few, you very clearly can see a strong correlation between every time we have one of these QEs, there goes the stock market. Boom. And who makes money on the stock market? The wealthiest 5%. They're the ones who make money on the stock market. So, you know, if you raise the tax on capital gains, this is all capital gains, 5%, it doesn't matter because they are increasing their income from capital gains investments, stock speculation, by 50%. So what's another 5%? They're going to end up with more money anyway. Okay, so I hit that nail on the head. QE. By the way, we got a global QE going on. Not only the U.S., you know, but so is Europe. European Central Bank, so is the Bank of England, and now Bank of Japan is going to do the same. Central banks everywhere are pumping incredible amounts of money into the system, buying up bonds, subsidizing stock markets and wealthy investors all across the world. Now, there's a second reason why QE is attractive to them, and that is if you increase QE, you lower the value of your currency. And if you lower the value of your currency, that means you're going to be more competitive in selling exports. So what we got is this competitive currency fight going on across the world, currency wars emerging through the medium of central bank QEs going on. The capitalists are competing with each other for a shrinking share of the pie globally, and they're doing it using QEs. But you know, this isn't stimulating the economy, not at all. Job growth, another prediction. Job growth will continue to stagnate, I predicted. And there will be false starts in job recovery that will be mostly a reflection of seasonal and other statistical factors. We are still well over 20 million jobless in this country. And this fiscal cliff is going to slow it down even more. This Friday, we will have the latest job predictions, and it will be the last, I predict, that will look from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the latest job numbers, excuse me. In the winter, the job numbers always perk up, and then they collapse again in the spring, and I think we're going to see more of that coming up. We're still over 20 million unemployed in this country, and you know, the jobs that have been created, very interestingly, 60% of the jobs lost since the last recession have been high-paying jobs. The jobs that have been created, 58%, have been low-paying jobs. We're just churning out high-paying jobs for low-paying jobs, and that's one of the major reasons why the median family income has been continually declining here since 2008, actually before that, and will continue to decline. And as that happens, I don't bet on any real consumer spending driving the economy. Third prediction. I predicted that Congress and the administration will pass two major tax bills in 2012. Well, I missed it by one day. They passed the tax bill here yesterday. The big tax cuts, by the way, are coming. What do I mean by that? I thought we would just raise taxes. How are the big tax cuts coming? As I predicted in my articles, there's three phases of this fiscal cliff. We just finished the first one. The second one is coming up with the debt ceiling debacle and fighting over virtually all spending cuts. But the third one is coming later in the year. And this will be big corporate, not individual, corporate tax cuts. Obama has always been on record. He wants to cut the corporate tax cuts from 35% to 28%. That's coming later in the year. That's why the CEOs have been on board with him with this. They know they got to get some resolution to the fiscal cliff, quote, deficit before they can come back and get their big bite out of the apple and a big corporate tax cut. That's coming later in the year. And with it, more entitlement cuts, not just the ones we're going to see here in the next couple months. All right. Big tax, corporate tax cuts coming. Watch it. Phase three of the fiscal cliff, a.k.a. austerity, American style. What else did I predict? Foreclosures would continue to rise in housing. Negative equity would continue to grow. And predicted home prices would fall. Well, I kind of missed that. Home prices are rising a little bit here and there in the best markets. They're kind of stagnant everywhere else. And we hear a lot of talk about home prices rising. But, you know, home prices fell 40%, and now they've risen maybe 5% and making a big deal about it. Well, they only got 35% to go. I don't predict that there's going to be a housing boom here, and I don't think housing will drive us out of this slump, economic slump called epic recession we're in. All right, so maybe I didn't quite hit that one right. There are several more predictions I made last year, and we're going to come back and deal with those. But first, we need to take another break. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Jack Rasmus, Joe, Alternative Visions. We're talking about my economic predictions of last year and to what extent they have panned out over the last 12 months. Subsequent shows, we will talk about predictions for the coming year, and I will also have several different guests on giving their perspectives. Not your typical talking heads you see on conservative talk shows or on the mainstream, but you know, good economists from the left, a progressive side, and what they see in the economy. But that's in coming shows. Okay, let's go back to my predictions. All right, I kind of missed it on home prices. I hit it on the nail on the head with QE. I also sort of predicted accurately with regard to the tax measures, a little late, maybe. Also talked about stagnant job growth, which is still pretty much the case. But okay, what's another prediction? Another prediction was U.S. exports and manufacturing would slow significantly in 2012. You know, all the talk was manufacturing was going to lead us out of the recession, you know, in 2011. What happened in 2012? Well, it slowed down, just what I said. Last November's numbers, we were at a 40-month low in terms of manufacturing and exports. They are not driving the U.S. economy. Manufacturing, there are only about 11 million people in manufacturing in the U.S. out of 155 million labor force. How the heck could you grow manufacturing, which has been shrinking almost by half in the last decade, as more and more manufacturing companies have moved offshore in the United States? How in the heck can that stimulate economic recovery? You can't generate enough jobs to stimulate recovery. Obama brags about what he did with the auto industry and jobs. Well, we lost 350,000 jobs in the last recession in auto, and we gained maybe 150 back of that. We're still 200,000 down. And manufacturing is not going to lead us in a recovery in this country. Yet we put Jeff Immelt, CEO of GE, in charge of our jobs program. Don't expect any big growth in manufacturing. Well, manufacturing and exports are slowing around the world. The entire global economy is slowing down slowly, but nonetheless on a very clear trajectory. Some months, you know, you get a little boost up, and you got to look at the long-term trends. You cannot look month to month. most economists today in the U.S., you know, just look at last month's numbers and then they hype them and say, oh, big recovery, like home prices. I don't look at month to month. I look at longer term trends. Okay, so I hit that one accurately. Exports and manufacturing have been slowing perceptively here. Another prediction. The Eurozone sovereign debt crisis will stabilize and then worsen again, I predicted last January. Well, that's kind of what happened, wasn't it? We had another blow up in Greece, another crisis in Greece where they can't afford to pay because of austerity programs, keeping the economy in depression. 5 years now, Greece has been in depression. Spain is in a depression. Portugal and Italy, not far behind. All the southern periphery in Europe is not in recession. They're in or close to a depression. You know, with 25% unemployment, that's depression. So I said it would stabilize, and it did. Last summer, the head of the central bank in Europe, Mario Draghi, talked up the euro, the currency, and by simply talking about things he was going to do, not having done them yet, he stabilized it temporarily. But as we will see, this situation in Europe will continue to worsen. There's a triple crisis in Europe, not just sovereign government debt, but there's a banking crisis brewing, which is the real serious issue in Europe. And, of course, we got a slowly grinding recession. All the countries are falling into it at different rates, which will continue. Truly an epic recession conditions in Europe. And that's providing a big drag on the global economy. I predicted also two or more banks will fail in the Eurozone. And, of course, they have. Not the ones I thought, but nonetheless significant banks. Bankia in Spain collapsed, and Dexia in Brussels collapsed. And, of course, they're bailing them out and keeping them running as zombie banks. You know, we got a couple of zombie banks of our own that are really technically bankrupt since 2008, but the government keeps them going. Who are they? Citigroup and Bank of America. Essentially zombies. In other words, if you added up their balance sheets, they would be technically bankrupt. But they're too big to allow to disperse their remaining assets and shut them down. Okay, another prediction I made, the growth rate in China will slow, which it has. Typically running at 9 to 10%, it's now about 7%. And China is now attempting to stimulate its economy once again, as it did in 2008-09, which allowed them to weather the downturn, global downturn at that time, fairly well. So they're doing the same thing again. We'll see whether it's sustainable. You know, with the rest of the world declining and in recession or stagnant, as in the U.S. or in Japan, so forth, China's economy is heavily dependent on exports. And if the rest of the economy is slow, globally is slowing down, who are you going to sell your stuff to? So China, that's a prediction on the mark, I would say. And global trade will slow and begin to contract in 2012, and that actually happened as well. Contraction meaning below a 50-point mark. This is the way they measure growth or not growth. If you fall below 50, that means you're contracting, your economy is contracting, or trade is contracting, and it's been below 50 here globally for several months now. So, you know, if you add it all up, you know, maybe I missed 2 out of the 10, 2 or something like that. Not a bad track record. You know, maybe I was off on the home prices question, but certainly on the mark in terms of monetary policy and so forth. My last prediction was that there would be a double dip sometime in 2013. But that double dip in the U.S. would depend on two things. One, the outcome of fiscal cliff negotiations and stimulus, whether we would get some stimulus again or not. Doesn't look like we are. And whether there would be an eruption of a banking crisis in Europe. Well, the banking crisis has been staved off. by a number of measures in Europe did not happen, and of course the fiscal cliff was put off during election year. So now we will see, with these two elements back on the hot front burner here, what happens to the U.S. economy in 2013. Well, I'll be talking about that issue, predicting 2013, in my next issue, my next show. So stay with us next week. Come back next week, and we'll be predicting what's going to happen in the future in the U.S. economy. And, of course, we'll have a follow-up on the fiscal cliff. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Hope to see you next week. More on the fiscal cliff, more on the economic predictions to come.